Because otherwise you end up just kind of predicting the future or trying to. You end up saying, well, what features do we think people are going to want? And either you make a wild guess and you risk being totally wrong, or you spend way too much time researching it and talking to people.
Welcome back to the First Crack Podcast. I am your host, Garrick Van Meer. This is First Crack number 92. In-depth interview profile of Kerbly.com with its founders, Bruno Borstein, who you just heard from, and Ben Moore, who's gonna kick off the interview portion of the conversation. I want to thank JeremyPiller.com for the theme music of First Crack Podcast. And this conversation with Kerbly.com is a complement to my original write-up of them over at Minteractive.com, MNTERactive.com, which you'll find a link to in the show notes. If you like these sort of profiles, then let me know. Drop me a line, firstcrack@gmail.com, or leave a comment over at firstcrackpodcast.com. I think that's everything. That's it. We talk about Kerbly and agile development processes and Ruby on Rails and all that fun stuff. Here is Ben Moore answering the question, what is Kerbly.com?
It's DIY projects at home. It's design choices you make at home. Anything you can do at home, you can find a way to make it a little bit better at Kerbly. Bruno and I had been talking about ideas probably since the middle of this past summer, and it started in something real estate related, and we've had a few iterations there that, you know, may come back from the grave at some point. But we came down to where were our strengths, and it was on social networking. We had just launched WiFly with Space 150 on, when was that, September?
That would have been August 15th probably.
So we launched that on August 15th. You know, that was our strength was Rails and making a social networking site. So it's sort of like, how can we combine this with people's homes? And we were both out there looking. We had both heard of apartment therapy and DIY network and HGTV. There's many, many channels of that type of content, but nothing that was sort of bringing it together in a way where every individual person could sort of, you know, be the star, so to speak, or could be in front of the camera in a way, and we wanted to bring that out. So that's kind of how it came about. Do you want to fill in?
Yeah. So this is Bruno. You know, we sort of had been thinking about this idea, and it kind of evolved in a sort of a series of steps. But when you hit a certain point in your life, your home really starts to define who you are, or else you define what your home is. It kind of goes back and forth. But in any case, the place where you live and the place you make your home is really an expression of your personality. And when people start hitting a certain age, you know, mid-20s, buying houses or moving into condos or apartments, you start spending a lot of energy and money and time making your living place unique and making it suit your personality and making it a real expression of the kind of person you are. And so we looked on the web, and we didn't really see a place that let people express that and really revel in how fun it is to make your house your home and how great it is to, you know, spend all this time and, in a lot of cases, spend time with somebody else, be it your girlfriend or roommates or whatever, improving your place. So that's what Kerbly is. Kerbly is a place where you can take all that energy and all that great stuff you're doing on your house and express it online. You know, you can show off the great closet reorganization you did last weekend, or you can talk about the colors you chose for your living room or the furniture you picked for your den or whatever. But, you know, it's just a great place for people to let that stuff out. People are really getting a kick out of the feedback and the affirmation you get from posting an awesome photo of your living room and then having other Kerbly users come out there and say, hey, good job. You know, this is really cool. I like this. Or, you know, I might want to try something like this in my house. So that's been super fun to watch.
Yeah, and not just in the decorating side, but also the DIY side. There's tricks that people have come up with or ways of doing a certain technique that they share with the greater group, and people eat that stuff up. People love it. It will be advertising-based. It's not... we don't have a huge top line right now.
Yeah, the cost of putting something like Curbly together gets lower every day. So we've been running off of our own money for now, and it's a real bootstrapped idea.
And you know, the main cost, for if anybody else was doing this project, would be developer time. But since Ben and I are the developers, we don't have that cost. So we can run the thing a lot cheaper than anybody else could. You know, we office out of the Minneapolis Public Library, which is where we are right now. So we get office space for free. We get internet for free. You know, our cost is coffee during the day.
Yeah, we buy coffee because we, you know, feel bad for sitting in a Dun Brothers all day long, like the other sort of transients in town. But at least, well, we try to smell better in the morning.
Yeah, exactly.
We do meet at Bruno's house sometime. We haven't really been meeting too much in my apartment yet, but
yeah. Well, there's no lack of spending time, you know, on our places. I mean, I've been doing this little video segment that we call the Fix-Its, where my girlfriend Alicia and I will choose a DIY project, usually over the weekend, and do it, and then we put a video up on Curbly. So we've got two episodes of those up so far that have been really fun to do. We've made a real effort to meet with people. So we're constantly getting in touch with people who are sort of in this space in the Twin Cities to get their feedback and make sure that we're on track and make sure we're sort of iterating based on what our users think. So, you know, we're meeting with real estate agents, and we're meeting with interior designers, you know, people who could potentially be users of our site, to make sure that we're not like getting sort of closed up in our own little world of the library and the Dun Brothers and stuff like that.
Yeah, and part of that, another way to compensate for that was we were really concerned about pushing this thing out and getting it live so that we weren't isolated for too long, you know, in a cubbyhole developing the God application or something. That was built into our strategy from day one. Build the perfect application. We didn't want to find ourselves doing
that.
Maybe
we should explain what that philosophy.
Wibben?
Yeah, well, what Ben means by God application is sort of like, a lot of times there's this pressure to make an application perfect before you ever let anybody look at it. So you spend all this time tweaking and pursuing the perfect at the expense of the good. And so what we really wanted to avoid was doing that. So Ben came up with this philosophy called...
Yeah, well, it's called Wibben. So we're going for the absolute minimum number of features. To push out the door, and then as far as what we do next is where Wibben comes in, which is what would I bitch about next. And so we've used that, I think, successfully. I mean,
right, so
we started with login, and then after login on a DIY design site, what would we bitch about next? And
right,
it was
so
probably posting photos of our place. So then we did that next, and
exactly.
That's how we prioritized.
Yeah, and actually it turned out to be a great way of, you know, figuring out what our feature set was going to be. It turned out to be a really good way of figuring out our feature set because, you know, it helped us really trim it down and focus and not get sort of feature bloat right off the bat.
Yeah, but that urge doesn't go away. I mean, the urge to keep filling it and filling it is like doesn't go away. We think it will show our users, too, that, you know, we care about them. We want them to help us direct this thing.
Yeah, definitely the way we look at it is the part we built before it was live was sort of the smallest part. We need to, you know, keep iterating on it once it's out there, once our users are telling us what they really want. Because otherwise you end up just kind of predicting the future or trying to. You end up saying, well, what features do we think people are going to want? And either you make a wild guess and you risk being totally wrong, or you spend way too much time researching it and talking to people, when the easiest way to do it is to just build something and then let your users say, hey, you know, you don't have photo uploading. Can you add that? And we're so agile and flexible that we can add that sort of thing really quickly.
Yeah, that's another way to look at it, too. With Rails, I mean, we're only one day behind the future, in a sense. We can get a new feature out that's going to meet their needs. So we're only going to have to go back one day. We're going to be a day behind. I came from a Java background, and so the benefits that I get out of Rails are that we see with Curbly are that we were able to make this application in about a month, and really not even entirely focused. We were still kind of debating features half the time, or we'd still
debate like, oh, we should go meet with this interior designer to make sure that we're on the right track. So it was amongst all the other stuff that you try and do when you're trying to start something.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like we were just purely developers. I mean, we were entrepreneurs here too, so we had to do all the other stuff that comes along with starting up a business. So, yeah, like Ben was saying, the fact that we were able to code this thing that quickly is the main benefit.
Yeah, it's real leverage, and also to the point that I never felt like we were spending time doing like the scut work of a software application. It really felt like every piece of code, every chunk of code you write is a little bit more significant, and so it's a little bit more sort of cerebral than, or you know, intellectual than, because you're making actual decisions as you go. Whereas with, at least when I was doing Java, there was an awful lot of make sure you rewrite the same name over in these other six files, right. And that just doesn't happen with Rails. The assumptions that it makes, we're perfectly willing to. We don't even. They're actually becoming expected. More like I want them rather than a constraint. If that makes sense.
Well, and you know, it also helps that we were building the kind of app we were building. I mean, we weren't doing like Ben sometimes says, software for a fighter plane or something where if something's wrong, somebody's going to die. I mean, this is a social networking site. It's a community website, and Rails is just set up really well for that sort of thing. So the assumptions Rails forces you to make actually are right in line with the kind of thing we were building.
Yeah, I expect there. I don't understand why there's not more. Frankly,
I've been thinking about this idea for a while because this is kind of how I got started. But I think about it as like the democratization of web development. Mm-hmm. You know, and maybe this is a good place for me to talk about my background in this thing is that. I started coding in Rails when I was working in PR. So I have a journalism degree from the U of M. I don't have any formal training in web development, but I was able to release a few applications on my own thanks to Rails. And then I sort of moved my way up into something a little bit more formal. But I fully expect there to be a lot more people like me and Ben who just have an itch and scratch it or have an entrepreneurial itch and say, well, what's a good idea that I could turn into a business? Rails takes the pain of, you know, the software side of it away and lets you focus on building something and forming a business and not worrying so much about, you know, how you're actually going to get the software built. That's the other big thing is that, you know, if you have to spend a year and many thousands or millions of dollars building a piece of software, a website, then in order for that to be profitable, you have to have a lot more return. So you can't just build whatever comes to mind. You have to build something that's going to bring in tons and tons of money to pay off your investment. But if it takes you a lot less time and the risk and the cost of starting it up is lower, then you don't need as big of a return to make it profitable. And even the need for the size of your ultimate audience is smaller. So, you know, you can just build a little app that, you know, maybe won't have as many users as Google does, but it might be profitable for you because you were just one person who built it.
Yeah, another way to look at with Kerbly too. Imagine if this was a project that like TLC or one of those big shows was going to try and put together. They probably would have spent more than a month making the decision of whether or not to do it, and then several months deciding how they should incorporate it with their brand. And it, you know, if they were only Rails developers. Which is our case.
The speed of development obviously is way greater, but that affects everything else. It affects the, you know, the mental cost of every decision you make because, you know, the decisions aren't, the risks are all lower. So you don't have to spend so much mental energy on every choice because you know that, you know, you can build it quick, you can change it quick. So it's not like you have to have a board meeting to figure out, you know, every detail of the application.
Yeah, like for another way to look at that is, like, we've been live since just over a week. We got Doug last Friday, so we weren't really able to do too much development that day. Right. But we're about to make some major changes to our homepage. Well, it'll still look like a homepage, but it'll be a lot different, and if we're wrong, we're okay with that.
Right.
Because we can change it right back. Well, not only back it up, but you move forward. You know, we'll probably be half right And then we'll incrementally go from there, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, in a lot of ways, you have to look at web development as a series of discovering mistakes. You know, you have to sort of discover what's wrong and fix it, and that's how you get better. It's much easier to figure out, you know, like what's not working and change it than it is to try and, you know, take random stabs at the perfect solution that will work for everybody. There's always going to be little things that are wrong. You know, and it's actually, I think it's interesting from my point of view that web development is sort of just now getting to this point because other fields are there already. For example, like writing. You know, writers have long known that the way you write is you do drafts. You write, you throw the first thing you think of on the page, and you iterate. You edit it, you change it, you revise it. You know, even newspaper writers will do 10 drafts of a 500-word article. So they know that iteration is the way to go. And, you know, writers have always known that the scariest thing is looking at a blank page. And when there's nothing on it, if you spend all your time, you know, crafting the first sentence and making sure it's right, you'll never write anything. And so the way to do it is just write something. You know, and they, this is what I always learned was write the first thing that comes to your head. If the first word that comes to your head is the middle of the article, write that. If it's the final line of your story, write that and go from there. And I really see Rails as being an extension of that. You know, graphic designers do the same thing. Artists do the same thing. They iterate.
Yeah, but the only difference is big business. For them,
can't do that.
Stakes are higher.
I mean, but Ben is right. I mean, I don't want to make it seem like I think every software developer should be doing things exactly the way we're doing it. I know and we realize that if you're Microsoft or Google or American Airlines, you can't just throw code on the page and see what happens. Unfortunately, we're not in that position, and we don't want to be.
You could make an argument that Google has just done that, though.
That's
and
true.
Now they're pulling back.
Yeah.
But I bet even the guys at the top would be happy that they did have at least a little bit of time to get some new ideas out there and then consolidate from there.
And, you know, it definitely, I'm sure, as Kerbly gets, you know, as Kerbly grows and gets more users, I expect our degree of agility to, you know, decrease because the stakes get a little bit higher, but you know, this is the fun part for us is having that freedom, and hopefully we'll be able to keep some of that, as much of it as we can.
Low revenue equals low stakes.
Yeah.
Right now we can do whatever we want. That's right. I mean, you can throw not too complicated of an app up there and have it generate enough Google ads to pay your rent.
Well, you mentioned like the effectiveness of blogs, and I just think, just going back to what we were just talking about with agile software development, I think that really plays into what we were talking about as well, which is sort of agile marketing and public relations. Because, you know, it's all well and good to build an app in a month. Maybe you're just one guy and you don't need much revenue, but if nobody hears about it, it's not going to work. But fortunately, we're living in a time when getting people to hear about what you've done is easier than it used to be. So you don't necessarily need to get an article in the New York Times about you in order for people to hear about Kerbly. You know, you can do a podcast, or you can, you know, send out emails to your friends. There's a lot of other ways to get yourself noticed.
That are essentially zero in terms of cost.
Yeah, the cost.
Yeah, Dig doesn't cost anything.
Yeah.
Only a bandwidth.
Oh yeah, exactly. But yeah, the costs are low. I mean, the financial costs are low. There's a cost in learning how to do those things. And we're kind of going through that right now, figuring out what are the best ways to promote, what things work and what things don't. There is a cost there in getting your head around that and figuring
it
out.
It's really nice to have the only cost be your own knowledge or acquiring it.
Definitely. Because that's an investment, you know, that you'll get a return on later on.
Oh, I just want to talk about the Ruby group, which meets every last Tuesday of the month, was started about a year ago. I went out to RubyConf last year and met Charlie from JRuby, and didn't have a Rails gig at that time, and knew I had to beat the drum and try and make it rain. So with Charlie and then John Dahl at Slantwise, we sort of got together and started the Ruby group. And I think it started as a support group, I think, for Java developers or people who had tried Ruby. And, you know, we'd go around the room and ask, so how many in here are doing Ruby for a living?
Yeah.
And I think there was one guy who was writing like printer device stuff or wasn't even doing Rails. And I think maybe I raised my hand. I don't remember if I had a job at that time doing Rails, but anyone who's interested in who's halfway entrepreneurial and who enjoys what's going on in technology and that's all before whether or not you want to learn or talk about Ruby or not. If you have any of those interests, it's the place to be. Sometimes the other groups, I won't name them, they get a little bit stale or sterile or some one of those words. But the Ruby group is pretty laid back, and probably the smartest person in the group right now is a kid named Chris Carter, who's 15. And whenever we have a Rails question, he always whips out his mental API and
yep.
answers it. So
must have like a photographic memory or something.
It's a motley crew. Yeah. I think a couple emails went around. They're talking about we should code also once in a while. But so many of us are working on projects on just either because we want to or because we're getting paid to freelance or something, that many of us work in the evenings anyways. And we decided to meet up on Tuesday evenings down there, and that gets a little thin sometimes. Charlie's pretty good about getting down there, but yeah, it's just another way to sort of foster the Ruby community.
What I think is great.
The Ruby group has been really good in terms of just getting people work. I mean, you know, because now I think employers or potential employers are starting to take notice and sort of it's just where do you go to find Ruby developers in the Twin Cities?
Sure.
There isn't really a directory of them. One of the best places there is right now is the Ruby group. You know, you send an email there or you talk to somebody like Ben or somebody who sort of knows everybody in the group. And chances are you'll be able to find somebody who's got some free time or really knows what they're doing and can help you out. So it is a really good place for developers to find job opportunities and for employers to find really smart people who could help them out.
Yeah, it's also inspiring to be around because I remember in some of my old jobs thinking that like I didn't like programming anymore or that maybe programming wasn't for me. But it was really I wasn't around people. I wasn't around people who are interested in having fun with technology. And certainly at the Ruby group, you wouldn't be there unless you were interested in enjoying at least your day job a little bit more.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or your next job or whatever that is.
Really?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, we've all been at jobs where you worked with a bunch of duds and people who are just working 39.8 hours a week.
Yeah, exactly.
And these are not those people. These are people who like what they do. And yeah. That's always fun to be around, especially if you're in that field too.
Yeah, so. You can't say enough for, you know, being surrounded by people who are smarter than you or, you know, have more energy than you. It's true. It motivates you, and it's hard to like hang out with Charlie Nutter for half an hour and not be like, "Man, I got to do some more work or I got to write a plugin or do something," because, you know, people like that, they kind of inspire you to do more, and hopefully you can do that for other people too. And you know, the other thing is, I think we've got a great group at Ruby Group. I think there are probably tons and tons of other people in this city who would really fit in, and so we want to get them down there and make it bigger and make it better.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Kirk.